John.
Glenn.
It's time. It's time for me to get my mitts on that juicy inheritance of yours. So I want you to write me into your will.
Well, if I didn't have three kids, maybe you could be the fourth.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to be the step down. So yeah. in different wills, you know, you might go, well, if I can't leave it to whoever, I'll leave it to that. If I can't leave it to that, so.
Yeah, you'd be a couple of steps before the government, I reckon. Yeah.
John, you'd probably be like, and if there's no relatives left and my estate goes into general revenue, if general revenue doesn't exist at the time, then give it to Glenn.
If general revenue doesn't want it.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
No, you're much higher up the tree than that, old chap.
Yeah, nice. So we get a lot of... I'm actually surprised about the amount... Because when you think inheritance, right, you think elderly parents who are deceased, which you might not think of a young person in their 20s getting an inheritance. So we get a lot of questions and emails, and a lot of them aren't publicly on the group because it can be a sensitive thing. So I wanted to just dedicate this little episode to inheritances and what do we do with them. It is September, if you are listening to this when it's just come out, September 2019, for those listening in 5 years' time. What we need to do is, and you can do this anytime, but I just want to highlight September. Log into your bank account, look at all your transactions in August, just see what's coming out, okay? Then go into your iPhone and check your iTunes subscription, or if you've got Android, your Google Play subscriptions, and you've just got to cancel something you don't use. Then I want you to challenge your friends to do the same. So share it on social media, tag us, tell us what you have canceled. There has been people already, and it's the very start of September, saving thousands of dollars on stuff that they do not use. I've personally cancelled 2 Amazon Prime subscriptions when I've purchased stuff on Amazon through different email accounts and I've accidentally signed up. So this stuff happens, it creeps in. So tell us what you've cancelled and saved. Jump onto the Facebook group. You can download the templates for your Instagram story. Let's get this happening. Let's make a movement in Australia. Subscription September. It is here. Let's get onto it.
You're listening to My Millennial Money.
Unlike A Current Affair, we will not tell you about the most effective washing detergents, but we will expose a shonky builder at some point.
Tell you a quick story.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I had someone come to me and they said, look, I think they were like mid-40s, late-40s, and they had this inheritance of about $500,000 and... they were banking on that coming to them basically for retirement. So for 15, 20 years, they weren't doing any investing, any savings, just banking on that.
Because that was going to solve all their problems.
Correct, yeah. So you're probably listening to this thinking, well, why would you do that? But people do that. Anyway, long story short, Alzheimer's next door neighbour got their hands on it, changed the wills, and all of a sudden $500,000 no more. And she's coming for help, basically.
Wow. So who changed the will, sorry?
Well, the next door neighbour got involved somehow.
Right.
So the mother and, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had someone I dealt with in my financial planning practice. Very similar story, but there wasn't any malice or intent involved. I had these people, they called me one day and said, hey, we've actually inherited a house worth $500,000 and about $800,000 in cash. And it wasn't even their next door neighbor. It was a lady across the road. She was a single lady, well, a widow, never had kids, no family at all. Mm. And this family basically would take her shopping and do all this stuff. They didn't even know how much.
Yeah.
They just didn't actually know that she...
just out of goodwill.
And she died and she gave everything to them.
Wow.
And it's just amazing.
The moral of the story, be good to your neighbours.
Be good to your neighbours and just be good anyway.
Be a good person.
Yeah, so there's a million stories. So I want to dive in, and a lot of people, they wonder, like, if I receive an inheritance, will I get taxed? So there's a couple of things with the inheritance tax area. It could be two sides. Does the estate have to pay tax, or does the person receiving the money have to pay tax? Okay. Now, I don't know anything about tax, but in Australia, there's no inheritance tax, but there's actually no estate tax if someone dies.
Yeah.
So if you were, so that old lady that I talked about before, when she died, her money forms her estate. Mm. And usually on the formal documents, it would say the entity is the estate of the late Mrs. Jones. In Australia, that money stays in the estate and the government keep their mitts off it. The last election, there were some rumblings out there about a union leader said to somebody, we need to have an estate tax in Australia, which we're not going to get into the discussion about that. But I think they proposed if you had an estate, you know, worth over $9 million, you know, there might be a threshold or a scale and money goes back into the society that's allowed you to create that money. So
common sense prevailed.
Yeah, so that didn't happen. On the other side of the coin, if I was to receive an inheritance from my parents or a long lost aunt, there is no estate tax in Australia.
Well, the money's already been taxed on the way through, hasn't it?
Yes. So
it'll be double dipping.
Now, there are some little things. So if you do get an inheritance, number one, you need to get some advice. But if I inherited a house and at the time of inheritance, the house was worth $500,000 and I kept that house for 5 years and in 5 years it went up to $600,000, I would have to pay tax on that $100,000. So the cost base gets reset at the date that I inherit it. So and I think there are some grace periods and all that stuff involved, but the long story short is you don't really have an inheritance tax or an estate tax issue in Australia.
No, but if you keep the asset and create money from that asset.
It's just like any other asset.
Any other tax,
Now, if you're receiving money from superannuation, there may be some tax if you're not a financial dependent of the superannuant, which is the word for a person who has superannuation. So for example, John, if your kids under 18 received your super money or it went to Amy, you would not, there'd be no tax payable because they're a beneficiary for CIS purposes and tax purposes, basically. If you had adult children at the time, they would then potentially have to pay some tax if that money went to them.
So for our listeners out there that are saying, well, how does this relate to me? I'm only 22 and I don't have to worry about this stuff yet. The answer is, yes, you do, because your parents exist today.
Yeah, presuming. And that's right. So we've got a heap of questions that we're going to go through from real world, I guess, case studies from you that listen. But I just want to finish on the tax thing. There's a couple of people, I put it on Instagram. Yay_Callum says, do you have any taxes on them? What if they come from the UK/overseas? And then Pieces of Pie wrote, any advice on dealing with inheritances from overseas? So number one, you need tax advice straight up. Mm. I've got a colleague, shout out Tim, if you're listening. He inherited a house in Venezuela and I think he's got two in Venezuela and one in Italy. And he's like, I just can't be bothered. We're just keeping them. Just the paperwork drama. And the one in Venezuela probably is worth nothing. But so a couple of things. I've had clients receive money from the UK. Now, Australia has a double tax treaty with the United Kingdom. And I'm pretty sure how it works is if you pay tax where you're a tax resident, but if it's a higher, so if it's complex, I'm just going to say that. Like if you are expected to get a freaking inheritance from overseas, spend some money, get some tax advice.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say on the matter. Yeah. Because the client that I'm dealing with at the moment, they got the UK government gave them advice from HMRC.
Right.
And 6 years later, the government have turned around and changed the advice and are wanting more money.
Really?
it's a freaking debacle.
Rude.
So so the government are coming back to claw. So that's all going to court. Like it's just horrendous. So you need to get the right tax advice with overseas inheritances.
Yeah, not just the next door neighbor. Yeah,
because there could be tax to pay, for example, in the country that you receive it, they might have an estate tax.
Mm.
And it might be that person in the UK, if they know they're going to maybe have some wealth and die soon, it might be like, well, we need to transfer these assets into a trust before that person dies to minimize tax. So there's so much strategy.
Yeah, and whether they're going to continue working in that country or come back to Australia.
Yeah, so this is not a tax podcast and I'm half asleep talking about it. So let's get into the practicality. So I guess everything from here on in, we're going to assume that any money talked about, it's landed in your lap as a lump sum and the taxes have been paid, whether it's overseas, Australian government because of a tax treaty in the UK or whatever, or superannuation tax.
Or an asset.
Or an asset.
Yeah. Because they could inherit an asset.
They could inherit an asset. That's correct. We're going to talk about unencumbered assets. What happens with the debts? So, okay, so this is a good one. I'll use an example. My mythical mum and dad, who are still alive, what up, Wendy and Des, they've got a house worth $500,000, but they were a bit dumb and they got a credit card and it's got $100,000 on it, right?
Yep.
They can't control it. It's just out of control.
Yep.
So they've got a debt of $100,000. Not the mortgage.
No mortgage.
No mortgage.
Right, they cleared that.
And in the will, it says, hey, if we die, the house can go to Lauren and Glenn.
Yep.
Okay. So Lauren and I are like, yes, sweet. We're getting 500 grand because they own the house outright. But the estate has to settle the debts.
Mm-hmm. First.
If there's more debt than assets in the estate, bad luck, who's a collector?
Yeah.
So if your parents are up to their eyeballs in debt and don't have any assets and they die, you can't inherit their debt unless you've signed as a guarantor on some dumb loan of theirs.
Yes, that's right.
Because then you're on the hook. So ordinarily, and I've had clients that have passed away with $15,000 owing on the credit card and there has been no estate, and we just wrote to the bank and said, hey, here's a death certificate and a stat deck to say there's no assets in the estate, and they wiped the debt off.
Yep, debt gone.
So, yeah, the estate is responsible to settle any debts. And we actually will get an estate planning specialist to swing back around and do an episode on wills and estates.
Yeah.
We'll touch on it here.
Yeah.
But I guess what I want to talk to you listening today, everyone, have the discussion with your parents, and it's not about, hey, how much have you got? When can you die? Hurry up. I'm waiting on that money to make my life better. Mm. It's, hey, mum and dad, or hey, dad, or hey, mum, no one's getting out of here alive. Have you got some type of will or estate plan in order? Because I don't want a freaking mess on my hands if I'm the one that's cleaning this up.
That's right. Yeah. And is it updated regularly as well? Because things change over time, don't they? Like,
yeah, that's right.
So many different circumstances over a 10, 15, 20 year period, and all of a sudden, gee, back then wasn't relevant. Now, actually, that's not fair on the other two siblings or whatever it is.
And what I would say to your parents, and even get them to listen to this podcast so it's me telling them and not you, just say, hey, I don't need to see all the details to your will. I don't want to, and I don't need to know all the values to all your assets, but are you able to just flick me an email and copy in my siblings or whoever and just tell us broad brush strokes, these are our intentions. The original copy of the will is kept at this solicitor's office. The executor of the will is your uncle, David or whatever.
Yep.
And the intent is that if we were to both die, that the property would be split between you. If one dies before the other, the money goes to each other. Or in some instances, if your parents have if you've got a step parent, so if I'll use the example, dad remarried, for example.
Yeah.
And if dad is living in a house that he owns with the new wife, his will might have a lifetime tenancy arrangement. So that means that if he dies, she can live in the property as long as she lives, or if she has to move out to go to a nursing home, then at that point, the asset goes to the kids in the will.
Yep.
So just have the discussion with your parents to say, hey, we don't want a mess on our hands, but we just want some clarity to what's going down.
Yeah. So first of all, they need a will, number one, and number two, inform parties of the arrangements in broad form, and then everyone can get on with their life comfortably.
Yeah. So I've said it before, like the executor of my will is Tim Cooper, good friend of mine, and wrote an email to my mum, my dad, and my sister and copied Tim in and said, hey guys, original will's kept at Aubrey Brown, broad brushstrokes, this is happening, that's happening. I want to be thrown in the ground over there.
Yep.
I'm donating this to that cause. Any questions, best to ask me now because I can actually answer them.
Intelligently.
Yeah.
Or somewhat.
So there's no surprises. That's what we don't want. There's no will reading in the lawyer's office like the movies where it's all nice timber and everyone's gathering around and you get that, you get that. So.
And I think the key here is, in my experience, is any major event change in people's lives, that needs to be updated if it's not taken into account already.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Jess Thornton, she asked, when do you need to make a will? Now, if you're a 23-year-old single person and don't have many assets, by definition, the New South Wales government provides everyone with a default will.
Yeah.
Right? So if you die and you've got a car worth $5,000, it basically goes up the tree to your parents. If they're not around, it goes to your brothers and sisters. Like it will happen, right?
Yep.
And then if there's no one around, by default, it goes into general revenue to the government, right? So there is a mechanism, but I always talk to people, not necessarily about the will, but about the whole estate plan. Part of my estate plan, yes, it's the will, but then I've also got my power of attorney, which Tim Cooper is also my power of attorney enduring. So basically, Tim has full authority to go to the bank tomorrow, set up a credit card in my name and purchase a brand new car with that credit card.
Yeah.
So, or if I'm overseas and I need him to sign a document for me, he's got full power of attorney, right?
Yeah.
And he's also my executor. Yeah. But I've also got...
He doesn't realize what he's got himself into here.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a mess. And then I've got an advanced care directive, which basically means... You know, if I'm at the hospital and I'm brain dead, freaking turn the machine off.
Yeah, have you got that?
Yeah,
I don't think I've got that in mind.
Yeah, I got that. And then I've got another one that if I'm mentally not present or whatever, can't make decisions, enduring guardianship, I think it's called.
Yeah.
My family can actually step in and it's got my wishes in there. So broadly speaking... The will is not the important thing when you're young and healthy. It's more the other documents.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, do it as the bit of housekeeping. So my family have complete control and say around all non-financial decisions where Tim can just execute the wishes of me in the event of my incapacity.
So a common question on people's lips might be, well, what if you have a falling out with Tim or something happens to Tim where he can no longer operate in that capacity?
Yeah. So again, because you only want to spend the money once and do it right, the power of attorney states that if Tim's not around, it steps down to my sister.
Yep.
So that's a backstop there.
You've listed that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if I have a falling out with Tim, the onus is on me to cease that power of attorney.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And likewise, if Tim can't be my executor, if I survive Tim, there's step down provisions in the will.
Yeah.
So
in its simplest form, someone can go online and pay $30 and get themselves a basic will as a 22-year-old and get it done and move on with their life until something significant happens whereby they get married or have kids or buy assets.
Yeah.
From there.
I would never, ever suggest that because I haven't seen any of those do-it-yourself will kits that are actually valid.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time people might accidentally get someone who's mentioned in the will to witness it or they forget to date it twice here or whatever. So
it's
a waste of time. Like you go to a lawyer and get a good will done.
Yeah.
They cover off on the step-down provision so they future-proof it a little bit anyway.
Yeah, I suppose I'm just thinking for someone that's sitting there saying, I probably should have something in place and I don't want to spend, well, I don't know, $300 to go to a lawyer.
If you don't want a freaking will, just write on a bit of paper a memorandum of wishes and just give to your parents.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, if I do die on paper, can you please donate this to that charity, or I want my sister to have this and my brother to have that?
Yep.
It's non-binding.
Document it.
It's, but that's not legal advice and that's not a will, but I actually gave a document to all my clients and it was called End of Life Wishes, and it was basically a document that detailed a whole heap of practical things that if you did die, hey, I want this song at my funeral, I want this thing, this was that, I don't want them at my funeral, I'd rather be buried, I'd rather be cremated.
Yeah.
It's just housekeeping, but anyway, that's all boring. So
yeah,
it's just housekeeping that you need to do at some point.
And it's the same thing. I don't think it's a common topic around the kitchen table and it's not discussed at school. So where do you learn this stuff? And the idea of having a topic like this today was, yeah, we may not need it now, or it's relevant to us soon.
And it's funny, like, we're here to talk about inheritances, but that's after the fact. Before the fact is the estate planning.
Yeah.
And is the money going to the right person?
Yeah.
Josh asks, how does inheritance work in relation to stepchildren? Hold my beer, John.
For a bloke who drinks tea.
Yeah. Hold my long black. So I guess it's a two-edged sword. Inheritance work in relation to stepchildren. Generally speaking, I haven't seen many wills that, because it's receiving and it's giving, right? I haven't seen many wills, and particularly if it happens later in life, where the stepchildren are mentioned in that. If someone wants to write in their stepchild to their will, they're free to do that.
Mm.
Like in my will, I think, I can't remember, I think I've made a mention that I want somebody to have $40,000 to go towards a deposit on a house.
Is that your My Millennial Money podcast co-host?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the one.
So that, you would have only had to have recently updated that,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So, but if you are a stepchild and you are willed some money, there is no tax on that because there's no estate tax. So it's not really, if it's, it might be different if you're an adult stepchild and the money's coming from superannuation. There'd be tax involved, but generally speaking, Josh, I think it's more of the discussion around, it could be this, John, like if there's two families come together and there's two kids and each of the kids are step brothers and sisters or whatever,
yeah,
there might be a step down provision that, hey, if I die and my child has predeceased the stepchild, give the money to the stepchild.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And there might be situations where two families come together and you like the stepchild more than you like your own child. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's life.
Actually, I had a client where the stepchild was basically closer to the dad than the blood child,
right,
to the point where the blood child wasn't even in the will.
Really?
Because this guy, it was a new, so he'd had a child, she ran away with the kid. He really had nothing to do with his biological child.
Yeah.
But when he remarried, she already had a kid and they didn't have any more children.
Yeah.
So the quote unquote stepchild got the money.
Mm.
And sadly, that client did die and I was dealing with a stepchild.
Yeah. And I've just recently come back from the farm, as you know, and a topic around the dinner table was farms and inheritance and farms. And they were talking that one of the biggest, farm separations at the moment is, who do I leave my farm to? Is it my eldest son? Is it a combination of all three siblings, who two of them have no interest in the farm, et cetera, et cetera? And there's over the years, as through generations, been so many fights and angst amongst siblings and basically split up families because the will or lack thereof hasn't been
clear or whatever.
Inappropriate, yeah.
Yeah, and I would say to turn that up to 11, if you've got a big business that requires your expertise to run.
Which a farm is,
and that's what I'm going. It's technically, forget the farm discussion.
Yeah.
We've got a cracking business here. What do we do with it?
That's
so it's
right.
more of a succession plan for the people who are operating the farm. And usually it means you need to get someone into that business that can work into it. And if it's not a blood relative, you need to train them up and somehow slowly sell them equity to transition.
Yeah. A little bit like when Adam Sandler went back to school to impress his dad that he was good enough to be on the board.
Was that Billy Madison?
Billy Madison.
Yeah. Showing your age, John. So, yeah, and a lot of this stuff, we're going to get some juicy questions now. C. Fitzgerry asked, have either of you felt jealousy about somebody's significant inheritance? Have you ever felt jealous?
No, I haven't. I get it a little bit though, and point to mention on this farm topic, and there's no way in short form malice or jealousy around this, what I'm about to say, but my eldest brother inherited the family farm that we grew up on, right? Both my mum and dad deceased.
So, because I don't know this. So, mum only recently deceased last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she own the farm? Was it in her name?
She did. And then it was gradually moved over to him over the years. So
from the estate.
From the estate, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the ins and outs of how it was done over the years escapes me.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a debacle. It was structured in a way that it was.
Is it worth anything?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What, north of two?
Probably around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Circa.
Yeah.
But obviously they carry debt with them as well, farms. So not many farm operators, unless they're smaller, own their farms outright. But he was a natural sibling to take over the farm.
Right.
And has done for the last 20 years. But as a other, because as my sister and myself, if we really wanted to, we could really get quite upset and offended by that, because they're basically the whole worth as a family was handed to one sibling.
Could it sell on market?
And that's why this conversation was happening when I was home, was there's so many ways it could go. It could be split three ways, which means the farm has to be sold, or the owner or the sibling has to buy the other two out, which means they carry massive amounts of debt.
So at some point, like, is it in your brother's, is there a thing that you get your brother to say, hey, if you die, that farm, I want my estate or my kids to have some of that? Have you gone that? Or have you just gone,
look,
there you go, have $2 million, see you later?
Well, look, when I left the farm at 17 with no interest to run the farm at all. So I went to carve my own direction and as I said, absolutely no malice or jealousy around any of that, but I can see where.
It could have been.
Absolutely, there could have been, and a lot of siblings would have dug their toes
but
in.
But that's for you. It's the mindset thing where I'm not having this carrot hanging over there that once I get my hands on that, all my problems are solved.
Yeah, correct.
But what I can talk about, and there could be one person listening now who is in a farm situation worth millions of dollars, because we've got listeners everywhere. Someone wrote in the other day and they've listening to the podcast, and I'll read their review because I'm going to read it at the end. It's five star, brilliantly educational and entertaining. Love listening to this awesome podcast and have been binging all the episodes multiple times through Spotify. Whether you're looking after 170,000 chickens or on a train, the relevance of the topic are great for millennials. And I hope the good work is kept up for an excellent. So thanks, Rosie. So
chicken farmer.
So what I'm saying is, we've got a chicken farmer, right? Which is a business.
Mm.
Back in financial planning world, and if I was going to be a lawyer, I'd be an estate planning lawyer, because I think it's just fun.
Yeah.
What there is this stuff called, have you heard of the term estate equalization?
No.
So what you would do, and it could cost a bit of money, but it could be worth it. So basically what you would do is, if the property is worth $1 million, you can use a life insurance policy on the person who's the main owner of the estate. So when they die, one of the beneficiaries or two of the beneficiaries get proceeds from death cover.
Right.
And the brother, your brother, keeps the property.
Sure.
So the estate's equal.
Yeah, okay.
Now, there is some expense involved, but is it better to spend 100 grand over the next 10 years on insurance to make sure everything's taken care of?
Yeah.
Or have a mess with the lumpy assets that got to be fire sold.
Yeah.
So the estate equalization stuff, it's more complex for these big lumpy assets.
Mm. Yeah, and there's so many different corners you can take, isn't there, in regards to that? Like that the main breadwinner of that business, for example, if they have kids, and then depending on when that that main business owner dies, like if they could be 40 versus 80, it's a totally different conversation.
That's right. So your family farm, was it in your mum and dad's name, joint?
Yes.
And then when your dad passed, it all went to mum?
Uh-huh.
And then when mum passed, was there a will?
Yeah, so that was basically the wish of dad's, was to pass it down through to Shane, my brother.
Right. And was that discussed prior to any of the deaths? Or was it almost assumed in the family because he was...
Yeah, it was probably assumed,
But now Shane's got a problem on his hands.
Well, he's got the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's three kids, and we're only discussing this yesterday with Amy and I. Was like, well, there's one standout that's also interested in the farm and does a lot of work on it already, and he's only 15.
Yeah.
So he'd be the favourite. But, I mean, things have changed since
because
when
we do business succession stuff for businesses.
Yeah.
You know, I'm dealing with a case at the moment and there's three directors, huge business. One of the directors has a kid who's 19 years old.
Right.
The other directors has kids who are under 10. One of the directors wants his 19-year-old to have his share if he dies.
Right.
But the other two directors, we don't want to be in business with someone who's 19 and has no freaking experience.
That's
so
right.
It just has to, and that's why you need advice.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if you didn't have 2 cents to scratch together, it would blow up your family because you'd be going to that farm and your brother at the neck.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the problems arise is.
Well, communication's the problem and it's also the solution.
Yeah, well, it was all good and well at the time. We all agreed on that, but hang on a minute.
Things
now
change.
Now I'm broke. I'm coming back for another go. Yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah, that's a very good one. Are you sick of living week to week, or perhaps not having any money saved, or even stressing out when rego comes around? It might feel that your life just goes round and round and round because your money's going around and round and round. I've got a solution. We can change your life within a matter of weeks. It's the Glenn James Spending Plan. The people who have completed this course have paid off credit card debt, have money saved, feel more free than ever before, and this will happen within the first couple of pay cycles. So follow the link in the show notes wherever you listen to this podcast, use the promo code and change your life like hundreds of My Millennial Money listeners have done so already. I look forward to seeing you in the course and helping you really sort your money out. Hey, just a reminder, we run two other podcasts, My Millennial Money Property. It's about property, that's all. And if you're under 23 years old, Gen Z Money, it's for you. Check them out now wherever you're listening to this podcast. Adam Vorich. Remember Adam Vorich?
Yes,
he
I do.
Came to the Melbourne event, young dude.
Always he's on the Facebook.
Active
loves
in the
it.
Group. I think he's 17 years old and he's probably going to be a moderator of our group one day.
Yeah. he gets my jokes too, which I like.
Yeah. So Adam's a good fan of the podcast. He asks, and again, this is... I'm sorry that some of you have to ask these questions because to get money inherited, sometimes someone has died.
Yes.
Sometimes they're very close to you. So Adam asks, mine is in cash and I can't touch it for at least 5 more years. Should I invest in shares? So sometimes what happens is I'll give you an example. My own will, it's mentioned that upon my death, I've got a niece, Grace, and two nephews, twin boys, Jeffrey and James. Each of those kids are to get $200,000.
Yeah.
It's to go on trust.
Right.
Until they're 30 years old.
Okay.
Now.
You think they'll be sensible enough by then?
Well, the executor of my will says if, and the will actually says, if they're bloody on drugs, in jail or whatever, they're not getting it.
Yeah.
So there's those catch-all things.
There's a footnote to it. Yeah.
So, but it also says they can have access to it upon request after age 18 for minor life experiences. So if they want to go to Europe for a year, they can take 10 grand.
Cool.
They want to buy a new car. They can. So there's all those mechanisms.
Yeah, great.
But it actually says that it's to go on trust and invested in a reasonable balanced fund per se.
Yeah.
In this, and we don't know the situation that all these people write in, so it's all just general chatter. It's not actually advice. If that money, obviously there's something overarching that money that says he can't have it until he's 20X years old, right? There should be some mechanisms in that or the trustee of that money to have some discretion. I've done advice before in the same situation where, hey, this child has been left $200,000 from their rich uncle or aunt or whatever, and we need to invest it on behalf of them.
Mm.
So, and the thing is, if it's not invested appropriately, so for example, you can actually sue a trustee for not executing their duties.
Really?
Yeah.
Surely not in Australia.
Yeah. So, for example, if Tim Cooper, the executor of my will, decides that, no, we're not making that $300,000 per child.
Yeah.
It's going to go to the freaking Animal Wildlife Conservatory, whatever it is. I can't even speak. Other beneficiaries of the will can actually sue him as a trustee.
So there's a bit of...
There's a bit of risk
with carried with that role. Yeah.
So our general rule of thumb is if you don't need the money for at least 5 years, probably shouldn't be in cash.
No. Yeah, so he wants to invest it. Is he talking excess funds or?
Well, he just says his inheritance is in cash.
Yeah.
He can't touch it for 5 more years. Should I invest it in shares? Well, I think the number one thing is should I? You shouldn't have a say in this.
I was going to say, if you can't do anything for 5 years, it's
not your decision to make.
Yeah.
But what maybe is to the trustee, hey, why is this money not put to work?
Yeah. Yeah, or what is it doing now for me?
Yeah, that's just the general rule of thumb. Heggs asks, what to do with an inheritance when you're not ready to buy for another 12 to 18 months as you are a full-time student, intermittent part-time casual employee till the end of the year?
Right.
Again, you know, you've said that you're not ready to buy for 18 months, up to 18 months. My last breath, I was saying, if you don't need the money for at least 5 years, it should be put to work.
Can't invest it, yeah. Yeah.
So last I checked, 18 months was less than 5 years.
Correct. So why do we need to hold off 18 months would be my first question.
Well, it could be, you know, they might be able to buy a home, John, but the servicing, they might not be able to buy at all. They might need a mortgage.
Yeah.
So they're not really able to get a mortgage.
Yeah. So they might be able to just put it in mum or dad's offset account for 18 months, saving mum and dad 4%.
Well, what if it's an inheritance if mum and dad both tragically died?
Yeah, so...
See, and that's it. We've just got to assume, like, you're assuming it's mum and dad.
Yeah.
Who, or you're assuming it might be the grandparents.
Yeah.
I'm just assuming that it could be mum and dad prematurely passing.
Yeah, well, I think the key, as you mentioned, is 18 months is too short a time frame to expect outstanding results. So do nothing that's going to put that in jeopardy.
I'd probably do one or two things. Throw it in a term deposit for 18 months and get on with your life.
Yeah. Or, getting 2.5%.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Or throw it in an online saver in a different bank account so you're not seeing it every day. This is a good one, and I'm not very good at reading, but I'm good at paraphrasing. So, Edwina, we do want to get her on the show. We'll try and do it at some point. Hey, guys, almost 6 months ago, I got the worst news possible, that my mum had passed away. I'm due to inherit a hefty sum. I will be able to buy a house in the 400K bracket outright. While I'm incredibly fortunate slash unfortunate to be in this position, I'm finding myself very overwhelmed with the possibilities of where my fortune can take me. I'm 24 and incredibly frugal with my money. I'm currently traveling around the country with my partner, so we don't have incomes for at least the next 6 months. My question to you is, if you were in my position when you were 24, and knowing that what you know now, what would you do? You're keeping us very entertained on our giant road trip. Sorry for having to listen to our voice. And then I just said, oh, can you tell me a little bit more? Prior to our trip, we had saved $40K to invest in something, which is bloody amazing for 24-year-olds. Yeah, nice. I mean, I don't have that skill. We have money aside for our trip, as the trip was planned before Mum passed away. I've just finished my Bachelor of Business and my partner was working for local government in horticultural but has resigned. To the point of the point of this trip is to find a new home, somewhere to live and work for at least a few years, if not forever, and to make the most of our freedom while we still have it. I plan to start my own business in interior styling when we do settle. Thanks so much for a speedy reply. A lot going on there, John.
There is, yeah. I applaud them for just taking off and doing a lap around the country to find themselves.
I actually stalked her Instagram and was liking some of the photos. And it was just, I want to go to Northern Territory, to Broome.
Yeah.
I just think it's the... I love like a bit of photography as a little bit of a hobby.
Mm.
I'd love to just go and just the beauty and the color and...
Yeah.
I'm just so jealous.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's a lot
and
to
And I think they got a van
country.
And fit out the van custom and...
Perfect. Yeah, it's great. Sounds like an awesome trip. The first thing I would say is I wouldn't do anything with it until they are working. Obviously, for lending purposes, me personally would never buy a home outright. I'd like to... lend the bank's money.
Why?
Just so it can leverage and keep my cash for diversification or rainy day or buffers and things like that. Even if you could, like the example of that she gave, $400,000. Yeah, you can buy a $400K home outright.
But what if they landed in Bendigo, fell in love with the area, bought a house outright?
Yep.
It's all good.
Yeah. Well, it is. When I say outright, I would say, well, okay, can I put 100K down and have 300 in the offset?
Sure.
Versus owning it outright and having the title.
Mm.
Yeah.
See, I'd probably differ there.
Yeah, cool.
Only because of a personality thing. Like,
you'd spend it.
I'd buy, there's a new watch I want. If I'm going to live there and settle there and all that stuff,
yeah,
I would have no better joy than owning the house and owning the title of it.
Yeah.
And then if I did want to invest elsewhere, just put a lien on the house, use the house as security.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, I just think you're more governed then by, the banks, the valuers, all
these
people.
But you're more governed by the banks and valuers and all these people if you get them involved to buy a house when you could have just bought it outright with cash.
Yes, but that's why I'm saying if you're earning money and you've got the ability to put 100K down instead of 300 or 400, I'd just like to I'd like using the bank's money instead of my own.
Sure.
Yeah.
And paying non-deductible interest?
No.
Oh, because you got the offset.
Keeping it in the offset.
Yeah, but when you do buy another property.
Yes.
Anyway.
No.
I know what you're going. I know that you would not have debt that's non-deductible if you had that much money. I do know that.
Yes.
I'm not in a mood to freaking go on a philosophical fight with you anymore.
Oh, no, that's cool. Look, each to their own, but I'd enjoy Australia and not worry about spending it until they're earning money and reasonably settled, I suppose.
Yeah. I would probably, and it kind of goes back to the Dirty Mike discussion when we did that episode. And if you want to have a listen, just scroll through and look for the episodes. There's a couple there that says Dirty Mike or something.
Yeah.
I would, number one, make sure that money is, you know, in a term deposit, online saver, yep. out of sight, out of mind.
Yep, correct.
We're not freaking using that. If we run out of money on the road, we're being dish pigs at the RSL two nights a week living out of the van.
Yeah, like, I agree.
Categorically, we can't do that because people get freaking inheritances and buy VT Commodores and soup them up and they freaking wonder why they've got no money 10 minutes
is
later.
Is VT the latest model?
No, they're not. I don't even know. I don't do Commodores. John, you know that. So that's number one, out of sight, out of mind. And we're living off the money that we've saved because this trip was planned prior. And she's not saying that.
No.
But I'm just reinforcing it for the entertainment value.
And she's an amazing saver. Oh,
I mean, just absolutely slaughtering it.
Yeah. Maybe living off the smell of an oily rag anyway.
Number two, just for housekeeping, Edwina, I know your partner isn't listening. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but it's not in a joint bank account at the moment. I don't know if you've been together 10 minutes or 10 years. So just to protect your mum's inheritance, we want to make sure his dirty mitts are off it because you never know, you might freaking have a fight in the camper van and, you know, we're just protecting.
The good way to test a relationship traveling.
Totally. Yeah. And that's not, just another thing. If you're writing your wills, so I've said this before, in my will, my brother-in-law's name isn't in there. Your only family, blood relatives are in your will, not in-laws.
Yeah. Blood's thicker than water.
Yeah. So we just want to make sure that it's in her name only, out of sight, out of mind.
Mm.
If, and I'm picking a suburb, we're driving through Bendigo, we fall in love with Bendigo. There's, you know, it's up and coming and we can do a cool interior design business and he can get another job in local council. And I would still rent, if we settle in Bendigo, 10 minutes later, I'm not buying.
No.
I'm living there for a year renting. And then if it is, if there is the intention of 3 months in that, we might like to live here one day permanently.
Yeah.
Have the chat. Well, we've got two options now. We go and invest that money somewhere else or just wait, or like continue to rent vest because they seem like they're a little bit gypsy, which is cool.
Love it.
I can't do that because of my personality.
No.
But they can. Investing elsewhere and being a gypsy renting and rent vest all around Australia in 10-year slots. I don't know.
You're not like camp feet?
No. So the cool thing is you've got all the options in the world. I would also say if this was received and you were 40 years old and you did have the home, there's a strong argument of pumping some money into super for your future. But again, that's further down the road. I just want to finish, John. I had some clients last year. They were selling the family home in Sydney, okay? She was, I saw her, she was in her 80s. She had two daughters. They sold the family home. The husband or dad passed away. Actually, no, this is what it was, John. It was the grandma who was 80, the mother who was 50, and the daughter who was 35 or something. So I had this three-generation thing. I had grandma there, mum was there, and the daughter was there. And they all get on well. And they sold Pop's home and Nan's home, over $1 million in the city, moving up here to the coast. And they all had such, naturally, a really strong relationship with grandpa, dad, husband. They'd always wanted to go to Singapore. I put the challenge out to them. We've got a lot of money here. Would it put a smile on dad's face or Pop's face or hubby's face if his three girls booked the trip of a lifetime to Singapore in style, business class? Because it was the amount of money that if we blew $30,000, $40,000,
$50,000
on an amazing holiday.
Wouldn't put a dent.
One, it wouldn't put a dent, but would it put a smile on Pop's face?
Yeah.
Abso-bloody-lutely. So I think with the inheritance thing, and then I had another situation where there was inheritance and we were going to do something sentimental, like all, you know, not spending all the, and I don't want to get too personal because people who I know will might cotton on to this, but it was okay to spend some money if there was deep, deep sentimental value to that.
Yeah.
And it would put a smile on their face if they were 100%. Looking down.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But we're not pissing it up the wall.
No, and it was money that wasn't designed in the first place for you either.
Yeah.
Like, well, we didn't know the quantity. So, yeah, feel free to drop 10%, the old 10% rule.
Yeah. And even I've told people, and a friend of mine's dad died, and they received 100 grand each, whatever. And I said, if you buy a house with that or buy a growing asset, you'll never, ever, ever lose that money.
No.
But don't go and buy a new car with it.
Safe as houses.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't.
Please, 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 please.
Don't buy a new car.
You've just got to, with inheritances, you've just got to not put them into general revenue. It'd be like if the government sold a big power plant. Don't just give it everyone a tax refund. Put it into a hospital. Like, yeah. You never, ever lose that capital. It can't go into general revenue.
No, it's got to work for you, doesn't it?
But if it meant that, oh, I'm going to take 20 grand out of this to have the year off and study, I'm investing in myself, and Mum would love that.
Mm.
I mean, Edwina, she's already studied and all that, but I think she's on the right track. And you know why I think she's on the right track? Because she's freaking asking this question.
Good. She's on the Udna Dada track.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
It's up South Australia way. But yeah, look, you've got to have experiences in your life, and yeah, don't be too boring.
Yeah. So, and get advice. Let's finish with a review. Knitwear designer from Oz. Here for the money tips. Stay for the banter. 5-star. Favorite Aussie podcast. Love hearing from non-judgmental financial tips that are relevant for average income earners. Also for a couple of laughs. 10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Oh. Well,
look at that.
And highest is 5. That's
highest
pretty
is
good.
5. We'll take it.
Yeah.
All right. That was a cool chat. It's and good. For everyone, thanks for listening. Again, we're just so humbled that we get to help so many people and just keep you encouraged. And we're in your corner. If there's no one else in your corner, you know, Glenny and Johnny are.
In the red corner.
In the red corner. What do you mean, your red corner?
Like, isn't it boxing game?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, cool. All right.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. If you are after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. In fact, it's a general advice podcast. But if you do want somebody to talk to, jump onto sortyourmoneyout.com and click on Get Help, and I'll be able to put you in touch with an advisor or a mortgage broker who can actually sit down with you or have a Skype or a Zoom meeting and really work out what you need based on your own personal circumstances.
My Millennial Money supports A21. A21 is a non-profit organization that exists to abolish slavery everywhere. These guys rescue real people from human trafficking across the world. If you want to learn more about how you can contribute to the fight against human trafficking, check out a21.org/au.
Remember, we hang out on Insta at My Millennial Money. If you're a regular listener, you're welcome to join our Facebook group. If you want more money hacks, be sure to subscribe to My Millennial Money Express. It's short money hacks anywhere, anytime, right into your ears. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature only and has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. Please seek personal advice prior to acting on this information. Before making a decision to acquire a financial product, you should obtain and read the product disclosure statement relating to that product. Opinions constitute our judgment at the time of issue and are subject to change. Neither the licensee, any of the National Australia Group of Companies, nor their employees or directors give any warranty of accuracy, nor accept any responsibility for errors or omissions in this podcast. Glenn James, Urban Gator Proprietary Limited, trading as Sort Your Money Out, are authorised representatives of Apogee Financial Planning Limited, AFSL 230689.
Steph asks, does it affect any government benefits?
Well, my short answer would be no.
Do tell.
Because they've already received, tax has already been paid on that, and it shouldn't form part of their assessable income for that tax year?
I would say, one, get advice, but two, depends which way you look at it. If you're on a government benefit, which is looking at income, so I don't even know, like I'm just going to make something up. If you're on youth allowance or something, now, I don't know anything about Centrelink. That's first and foremost. If you're on, and I just remembered how many people listen to this podcast now and talking about something I've got no idea about. But this is my logic. One, get advice. But two, I would say there's a high chance that it may. So if you're on youth allowance and it's income tested that you can work X amount of hours a week, I don't know if youth allowance asks if you've got a portfolio of $8 million or not. But I'm erring always on the side of caution. It can affect government benefits because what if you were, for example, on if you were an if no and no one's listening. This is a freaking shouldn't be answering this one. I'll put this at the very end because it's a joke.
It's a good question.
It's a great question, but it can. I'm more often than not in my financial planning practice. Right, people who are over 60 are more likely to get an inheritance.
Yep.
Than someone that's 22. Just fact of life, right? Now, if someone's 65 years old and on the age pension because they own the house and haven't got 2 cents to scratch together,
yeah.
If they receive $1 million inheritance overnight, that now is an asset that's assessed by Centrelink.
Yeah.
So in that case, absolutely it will.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's the asset and there's the income side of things.
That's right. So, now, yeah. I don't know enough about Centrelink and family tax benefits and all that. But there's always strategy. I mean, if you are worried about losing your $18,000 Centrelink a year and you inherit $1 million, buy a freaking house with it.
Yeah.
And then that's hidden from Centrelink. But we don't run our life based on are we trying to get government benefits or not.
Yeah. If you're putting it into your principal place of residence, then live happily ever after.
Or super if you're under age pension age because I know some. So it is complex, that one. So I'm not going to put that at the start of the episode because that was a horrendous answer. Get advice. It's just the short answer for everything, get advice.
Yeah.
All right, so how's this? I was at JB Hi-Fi the other day. I don't even know if I've shared this. Maybe I did. I don't know. You'll tell me if I have. I bought one of those Apple Homes, the HomePod.
Yeah. Rings a bell.
Yeah. And then I was buying a charger cable.
Yep.
For my... Oh, I've just got to get this. Sorry. Anyway, I was buying a charger cable for my iPhone when I was in there.
Yep.
Actually, if you've got a... I got a 3 meter charger cable.
3 meter.
Yeah, so you plug it into the wall and you just roll over in bed and life's
for
great.
Your phone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know that if you've plugged in next to your head while you're sleeping, there's rays going through your brain and frying them?
Mate, as long as I'm on this planet, there's rays going everywhere. Now.
3 meters.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think it was 3 meters. It was bloody long.
Yeah.
So anyway, I walked up and here's a lesson for everyone. Just always ask at JB if they can move on it. They can't move on stuff like Apple stuff because there's actually just nothing in it. But most stuff they can move on. Now, I went up to a guy and I'm like, and it was $42, the cable.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, hey, bro, how are you? Can you do anything on this? He's like, oh. And he's like, oh, looked at his machine and did the whole theater thing. Oh, yeah, probably $30. I go, okay. And I used to know a guy at JB.
Yeah.
Just the stuff I used to get, like, for still, they would still be making money on it.
Right.
Anyway, I'm like, okay, thanks. Anyway, and I knew he was in a bad mood or whatever.
The $12 off.
No. It was 42. He did it for 39.
I thought you said 30.
No, 39, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so $3 off.
Sorry, I'll just repair that here.
Right.
Anyway, so I'm like, hey, bro, can you do anything better on this lead? And it was on for 42.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah, does all the theater with his computer or whatever. And he says, yeah, we can do it for 39.
Whole $3.
And I'm thinking, nah. Because I knew a guy who used to work at JB and I know that they just, make. So, and that's why they can sell TVs for a dollar over cost, because they make all their money from the cables, the warranty, the power boards and all that. Okay. That's a tool. That's a handy tip. And I'm like, that's crap. So when he walked away, I got chatting with another worker there and I grabbed another one, same one, but just one that hadn't written on. I'm like, oh, hey, bro, can you, know, do us a, can you hook me up on this cable? Yeah. And he goes, oh, yeah, there you go, $30. So you've always got to ask.
Well, and don't attract the person who got out of bed the wrong side.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I'm also of the view, like, if I'm I don't like haggling people right to the bone.
Yeah.
I don't mind people earning a little bit of commission off me.
Yeah.
Because you've got to work and earn money. I like a good deal.
Yeah.
But also, don't be tight.
10%. Come on, brother. Hook me up with.
So yeah, that was a bit of a win at the old J Bizzle.
Well done. So you bought a 3 meter cable, so $10 a meter.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like they probably that probably costs 50 cents to make.
Yeah.
Like it's just unbelievable.
So so in the meantime, you got this 3 meter cord running across your room.
Yes.
Everyone tripping over it.
Everyone. Yeah.
Father comes in and out of your bedroom.
Yes, John. you're
well
a funny one.
Well done.
All right. What else is happening?
Nah, I think it's we've covered everything today.
We have.
Wills.
Estate plan. Inheritance.
Get your mitts off it.
Totally.
Moral of the story, create your own path. And the rest will look after itself.
Oh, that's it. Just one thing that you can bank on in life is you getting out there and killing it.
Yeah, correct. In your control.
That's right. Okay, bye.
Thanks.